822 News Radio WJPF. Joining us on the other end of the phone line is Associate Professor at SIU, Tom Imboden. Professor, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you, Robert?
Well, I'm pretty good, and I didn't need artificial intelligence to tell me that. And that's the reason you've joined us here, kind of focusing on AI in the workplace. And as I sit here in our radio studio, computers all around me, I realize we've had AI in the workplace for some time, but it seems like it's taking a big step forward in the last 6 months, maybe a year. Has there been one big development that's really pushed us to where we are now?
I think the big thing is going to be the ChatGPT. When that was released and started being widely used by the public, it really made some of the more cutting-edge AI accessible to anybody who wants to hop on and create a free account. And that's just the general public that is seeing now that this type of technology is available, what it can do, maybe the limitations are. But the people who, are running the big businesses, little businesses, that have their eyes on technology to see how it can innovate what their business does, have been looking at it for years. But again, this ChatGPT has been the biggest development in, I think ever.
Now, as far as AI goes, you mentioned ChatGPT, and that's what a lot of people are talking about. And for that, it's, okay, AI, write me a paper about the Battle of Gettysburg, and it'll search the internet for facts, what other people have written, and sort of try to come to a reasonable academic paper about the Battle of Gettysburg. Are there other applications for it? Can it do more than just write us papers or make us cartoons or something like that?
Well, when we're talking about the ChatGPT, the big thing to remember is that it's trained on information that was made available to it, and there's kind of a cutoff. So if that cutoff was 2021, then it doesn't have, the input to use to create the new stuff you're asking it to, if you're asking it to do something that is based off of something that happened in 2022. So that's one of the limitations with the GPT types of AI, and there's tons of different AI tools and different models, and it's a huge area of computing and computer science. But we're still kind of in this new kind of public understanding and kind of just grasping what all is really capable, because it's been made so available and in our faces this last 2023.
Now, if you go back and you look at NASA, for example, some of the technology that it took to send people to the moon, the computer banks would take up just rooms and rooms and rooms. And now that's all been reduced over the years to, a chip that will fit on, the size of your fingernail. What kind of computing power is necessary to run this ChatGPT type of thing? I mean, is it small enough to fit into a cell phone? Are there massive servers that are needed? I mean, do you kind of get an idea of what I'm asking?
Yeah, so I think what most people, understand is the cloud, which is really just a whole bunch of computers that are located someplace else, are run and responsible by a company or an entity that isn't you. That's what drives the AI, the ChatGPT, and a lot of that is this kind of scalable, huge computing resources that are available to companies to make use of and not necessarily have to purchase all at once, because, if I was going to buy $1 million worth of computers for my business, but maybe they're only going to be used 20% of the time when we, are open for business or something, that's not a great business, decision. But in the cloud, we may use that 20% of Amazon's computing power, and then 7 or 8 other businesses make up the rest of that. And so the computing power is immense. Storage, the computing, because if you're talking about ChatGPT, I've seen, I don't have the stats in front of me, but they talk about how many millions of books, is the equivalent of what it's been fed into. And that's a lot of storage. It's a lot more than you can fit on a thumb drive. So these types of things are made possible by the investments that have been, kind of going on by the big companies that do the cloud services like Google, like Amazon, like Microsoft for, you know, for a decade at least. So computing power, you know, what we see and how it reaches us at the phone in our pocket, you know, it's getting smaller to us, but that's because of this cloud model where really the hard work is being done up in the internet, and we're just kind of sending little queries across the internet, asking it to do the number crunching in AI for us, and then it gives us the results.
We're on the phone with SIU Associate Professor Tom Imboden. And Tom, this is one of those deceptively simple questions. It comes off the text line from Dennis when he's heard us talking about ChatGPT, and he just asked simply, what does the GPT part stand for? Yeah.
You're making me forget. Let me, GPG, Generative Predictive Text, or Transformation. It is a type of AI that is based on being able to create new material, new content, sort of, looking at kind of combinations that it knows about, like words that are together in previous information that it knows. So if we talk about it knowing, you know, the contents of SIU's Morris library, that's been fed into one of these models. It is aware of, you know, if you look up the word Carbondale, you know, what words are you going to see around that? Illinois, you know, or Southern. And so when you create a question and you ask about Carbondale, it crunches the numbers based on what it knows about it being fed into it and says, well, it's good likelihood that the answer might have the word Illinois next to it. And so that's kind of how these GPT models work. And it's one of the, it's the one that's making the biggest splash, but we talk about AI. AI is kind of the large field that comprises things like machine learning and neural networks and deep learning and just all sorts of other kind of sub areas that also make up AI and are kind of have more specific use cases and things like that.
We're on the phone with SIU Associate Professor Tom Imboden talking about artificial intelligence. Now, earlier in the show, Tom sent me a text on the American Monument text line of an art project that he wanted AI's help with. The command that he gave the computer was psychedelic art, psychedelic cats carrying a sword, riding a dog. Now, that's a pretty definitive prompt that you gave it, and it generated four images, and two of the four didn't follow your pretty basic prompt. So my question is, with all of the brain power that's gone into AI, why do we keep seeing these instances of it deliberately doing what we've told it not to do? And should that be a concern for, you know, maybe nuclear weapons or something like that down the road?
Well, I mean, yeah, so I did. It gave me 50% incorrect images of what I asked it to give it. And I think anybody who's played around with this enough will have examples of things that maybe weren't quite right. When I first came and talked about this, I think it was back in February with you guys, it wasn't aware of some of the things I asked about, like who Tom Miller was.
Don't tell Tom that.
He knows. He knows. I told him. it may know now. Who knows? But the point is, it's still a technology that's evolving, and there's going to be a lot of improvements based on, you know, when we find it and say, hey, you know, you gave me these four images, only two of them are right, these ones were wrong. A lot of times that's fed in to help the algorithms and the systems that are you know, we're playing with kind of learn better. So, I'm hoping that nuclear weapons is not someplace that is going to be, you know, handled exclusively by AI in the near future or ever. Thinking back to the original Terminator and movies and yeah. You know, works like that. But it's still something we still have to kind of watch, because there are, there's areas that we use technology that we just don't have room for mistakes to be made. And I should mention, I flubbed on that GPT chat generative pre-trained transformer. That was the actual GPT acronym I spoofed on that earlier.
Hey, I didn't even have an idea, so you're way beyond me. We're talking with Tom and Bowden about AI, artificial intelligence. We've seen in the past, in recent past, some college students getting in trouble because they've written papers with AI and turned them in, and they thought they'd get away with it. Have you had anybody turn in a computer-generated paper to your classes?
Most of my work is either kind of, you know, thoughts on things that you have to kind of process yourself, or lab exercises. So they've kind of got to do the work before they can write anything. So it's not really in my area, but I know for a fact that it is a big concern, and schools are looking at how are we going to respond, or how are we going to deal with these technologies being available to students, and not just in college, but, you know, at the earlier grades in high school, in junior high, and it's something that we've got to figure out, because it's a tool, and people use tools for good purposes. So should we embrace it because it's a tool that we're going to have at our disposal going forward when we need to write stuff? Should that be the approach for a professor or a teacher and their students, or do we need to say, hey, this is a tool, but you can't use it? In which case, you know, there's a lot of arguments against that.
How would a professor identify a paper written with AI? Are there telltale phrases or words that it uses, or can it mimic your own, you know, style of writing?
So it can mimic to an extent, but not necessarily your style of writing. If we're considering ChatGPT, it can mimic what it's been trained on and what it's aware of. So in my personal experience, a family member was my son. He used ChatGPT to make an argument to us, and it wasn't for school, but I immediately recognized that the style of the writing wasn't his. And that's how I could tell. With college, if I get a batch of fresh students that I've never worked with before every semester, I'm not privy to how their writing looks like. So that's going to be tough. But, you know, if it is somebody that you're familiar with, that's kind of how I've been able to. And I know there's tools and there's suggestions, and people post examples of how ChatGPT has messed things up and how silly it sounds in certain cases and how it flubbed this thing or that thing. And it's only going to get better. That's the thing to remember. So it's going to be harder and harder. So we've got to think about these kind of ethical dilemmas, and in some cases, legal dilemmas concerns. Those have to be taken into consideration.
We've been talking this morning with Associate Professor Tom M. Bowden from SIU. Tom, before I let you go, any final thoughts about AI in the workplace, or even something from your department and your students that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Well, one thing that I found very interesting, I was looking up some stats just I'd have handy. One stat I read today from an article says by 2025, AI might eliminate 85 million jobs, but it might create 97 million new ones. So we still don't really know what is going to be seen. There's lots of promise, things like medical imaging and being able to find, you know, potentially concerning maybe images on an MRI or something like that. There's lots of promise, and it's exciting, but again, I'm not to the point where I think we should just, you know, have everybody sit on their couches and just use the AI to do their jobs yet.